community the chance to offer condolences to the bereaved and help them consume the overflowing buffet of condolence foods. It is believed that the deceased soul will not be able to pass over to the great hereafter unless all humans in attendance are stuffed to the gills with grits casserole, deviled eggs, and funeral potatoes. These foods are to be present at every stage of the mourning process, from comforting family members immediately after the death to the luncheon after the burial. If, at any time, an empty plate or serving platter is spotted, the shabby, half-hearted treatment of the deceased will be the talk of the town for months. So, when the sun had set the night before, I had showed up with the requisite buffet offerings. Although the very smell of homemade pimento cheese had made Gabriel roll the car windows down just so the ride would be bearable. I'd taken my place at Mama's side in the receiving line, which, as Southern funeral law dictated, included anyone who had ever met Grandma Ruthie or anyone she was related to by blood or marriage. And a few people had actually shaken my hand, despite the fact that it obviously made them uncomfortable. As a human, I'd done everything possible to avoid these situations. And other than being seriously wearing on my mental shields, it had been downright tolerable. Maybe it was better simply because Gabriel had been there. For the first time in my life, I didn't have to attend one of these things alone. It had been almost disorienting how sweet it was to feel his hand at the small of my back as I walked across the room. I didn't get the pitying, "You poor spinster librarian," looks. There were no pointed questions from Mama's friends about when I would settle down. Bessie Paxton didn't even make a snarky remark about the stress I'd put my poor grandmother under, something she did regularly when Grandma Ruthie was still alive. Then again, I imagine that sort of thing tends to diminish when your scary vampire boyfriend is standing right behind you. As sick as it was to think of a funeral visitation as a night out, it had been nice to be out of the house and child-free for an evening. Andrea and Dick had stayed home with Jamie, which he'd bitterly resented. He'd said he didn't need to be babysat, but then Dick had offered to show him how to hotwire my car, which I'd bitterly resented. The trick had been getting through the visitation with my poker face intact whenever a mourner mentioned that poor Lanier boy and how torn up his parents were over his being turned. Jenny had, surprise, surprise, managed to keep my involvement in the situation to herself. I think she was using a combination of meditation and internally chanting her sorority's secret motto to keep from spilling the beans. For my part, every time Jamie had been mentioned, I'd turned back toward the open casket and looked at Grandma Ruthie. She would have been very pleased with the delicately tinted peach suit Mama had found hanging in her closet in a garment bag marked visitation attire. At some point, one of the Whitlows was going to have to change her into the black bombazine gown that had been marked burial attire. She'd even attached little bags with matching shoes and accessories. It was strange that Grandma was making her final appearance at Whitlow's funeral home, where she'd been mourning husbands since 1957. I had a sneaking suspicion that they would name the room after her in memoriam. She'd left very specific instructions for how the room would be laid out, the flow of traffic through the receiving line and around the buffet, and the spray of white roses and gardenias on top of the dignified maple casket. And, true to form, she had actually written her own eulogy for Reverend Neal. Mama had given the good reverend her blessing to wing it when she saw that it was 37 typed pages. So far, the only real sore spot in the planning had been Wilbur, who had pitched an unholy fit and made a dramatic exit from the funeral home when he found out that he had not, in fact, been included in Grandma's will. His indignant fury that he hadn't been left with so much as a red cent confirmed my long-held suspicions that Grandma Ruthie had been another installment in Wilbur's retirement through inheritance plan. But at least Grandma Ruthie had died of natural causes, unlike the suspicious exits of Wilbur's previous lovers. Shuddering at the thought of Wilbur being anyone's lover, I glanced at the clock and realized that I had about 20 minutes to get to Mama's house or she'd start to think I wasn't showing up. Shaking Gabriel's shoulder to wake him, I climbed out of bed and padded into the bathroom for my somewhat extensive daily dental regimen. I turned on the shower, letting the room slowly fill with steam and desperately trying to remember the deerhead conversation with Zeb. I looked in the mirror and saw that my hair was actually doing something semi-normal, so at least I wouldn't have to wrestle it into submission during my limited grooming window. Yes, vampires could see themselves in mirrors. And doing so post-turning was a much more pleasant experience. I basically got the bookworm's dream makeover package. My skin was clearer. My hair had changed to an actually desirable color found in the brunette spectrum. My eyes, formerly an unremarkable muddy hazel, were now a clear and compelling hazel. My teeth were whiter, but I did have to maintain the aforementioned brushing and flossing routine. I didn't expect to wipe the steam away from the glass and see the bluish, shadowy figure of my Grandma Ruthie standing behind me, glaring at my reflection. "What the fuck?" I yelped, turning and scrambling away from the ghastly apparition of my grandmother in the buttery yellow pantsuit she'd worn to her last garden club meeting. My feet slipped out from under me, and I landed against the closed bathroom door with a loud thump.
"Language, Jane."
Grandma sighed, peering down at me with that familiar disapproving curl to her lip.
"Jane?"
Gabriel called from the other side of the door.
"Are you all right?"
I pressed myself hard against the solid oak, eager to put more space between my grandmother's sneering specter and myself. For the first time in my life, I was honestly afraid of Grandma Ruthie. Alive, she'd been a judgmental and intimidating presence in my life. Now, she was just scary. Her mouth was an angry, faded slash across her face. Her eyes were shadowed, opaque, and dark. I could see every bad thought she'd ever had about me reflected in them. "Grandma Ruthie, what the hell?" I yelled as Gabriel pounded on the other side of the door, rattling the knob. "What are you doing here?" She smirked at me and turned toward the mirror to adjust her smoky wisps of hair.
"I honestly don't know. I was yelling at that simpering idiot, Biddy Tate, and the next thing I knew, I was standing in the foyer here at River Oaks. You were sleeping, lazy little snip that you are, so I made myself at home. And don't think that I haven't seen how you've been running things around here over the last few days, Missy. You should be ashamed of yourself, turning your ancestral home into a den of iniquity."
"Didn't you see a tunnel of light?" I asked. I reconsidered, then added, "Or maybe a large warm pit opening up beneath you?"
"I'm not dead, Jane."
I snorted as the knocking on the other side of the door stopped. "Which is a shame, since they buried you this afternoon."
"No, I'm not dead. Obviously, the good Lord has another purpose for me, Jane, and it's quite clear why I'm here,"
she said, sighing happily.
"It's finally my time to be mistress of River Oaks."
First of all, that's a really creepy way to put it. And second, I'm already the mistress of River Oaks.
"Not by right,"
Grandma sniffed.
"The house should have gone to me. You're just a usurper, a pretender. Jetty must have been out of her mind to leave it to you."
"Well, it's too late now because you're dead."
"So are you."
"Yeah, but I have a physical form. You don't."
"You have a choice. You can accept that I'm here to stay and stay out of my way, or you can move out and leave the house to my judgment, as you should have in the first place."
I stared at her. "You mean it, don't you? This house means so much to you that you'd rather it sit empty and cold, a shell for you to wander around in for eternity, than for me to stay here and fill it with life."
"Well, you're not exactly filling it with life, are you?"
she asked, sneering nastily and looking to my middle, to the womb that would never produce future Earlies.
"Better that it be maintained by someone who appreciates the family history, who will care for it, love it. You'll only turn it into a tomb."
"You're insane. I used to joke around about how you were crazy, but death has honestly pushed you over the deep end, hasn't it?" Her misty form undulated toward me like some sort of psychotic sea creature. Her bitter, twisted face leaned uncomfortably close to mine as she spat,
"You've had it entirely too easy, Jane. All your life, I've never understood what you thought was so special about you. You expect everything to just fall into your lap as it always has. Well, no more. I will be making life here at River Oaks very unpleasant for you from here on out. How would you like to go to your death sleep one morning, only to wake up with the full sun shining on you because I've thrown open all the curtains?
You can't, I laughed. You're not strong enough to move objects yet. It took Aunt Jetty months to figure it out, and by the time you do, I'll have figured out some sort of exorcism ritual to toss your flat, disembodied ass out of my house. With that last syllable, the door behind me suddenly gave way. Grandma Ruthie's spectral form dissipated as the shower steam billowed out of the doorway. I flopped back against the fallen door, my head striking the wood with a dull thud. Ow! Gabriel and Jamie were standing over me with crowbars in their hands and confused expressions on their faces. Aw, man! Jamie cried, throwing his crossbar down in disgust. Explain, I said, arching my eyebrow at him.
Gabe said we could kick the door down if we couldn't pry it loose from the hinges, he grumbled. I was really looking forward to it.
Well, why don't you go down to the root cellar and kick through a cabinet door, I told him. There should be plenty of old ones left over from the kitchen remodel.
Really?
He beamed at me before scampering down the stairs.
Thanks! Do you really think encouraging wanton destruction is the best way to foster him into a mature, responsible vamp?
Oomph! Gabriel exclaimed as I launched myself at him, throwing my arms around him.
Jane, what's the matter?
Grandma Ruthie is here with us, I whispered, knowing that in all likelihood Grandma's invisible self was hovering somewhere in the room, watching the havoc she was wreaking.
Oh, sweetheart, of course she's still here with us. I know the two of you didn't part on the best terms, but you'll always carry your memories of your grandmother with you. The fond memories will outshine the bad.
No, I'm not stuck in the depression phase, Gabriel. I'm saying Grandma Ruthie is here with us, haunting the house. She was in the bathroom with me just now, basically declaring open war against us if we don't move out. I sent Jamie away because I didn't want to scare him.
The same boy who wanted to watch the Saw marathon the other night?
Enjoying exorbitant movie violence isn't the same as knowing there's an angry septuagenarian poltergeist hanging around the house.
What do you want to do?
Gabriel asked. Well, I don't want her in the house, that's for sure. Do you think Dick knows a guy who could do an exorcism?
Of course he does, Gabriel said. Whether that will involve paying his guy with a case of stolen car batteries, that's the real question. I'll call him. Why don't you get dressed and go to your mother's? I'll stay here with Jamie and try to sort this out.
I wish you were going with me. You've made this whole process so much easier, I said, kissing him deeply. He gave me a quizzical smile. Hey, you're forgetting how many grandparents I've buried. Even with the haunting issues, comparatively, this has been a cakewalk.
I wish I could go with you, too.
I bit my lip and stifled a giggle. I would believe you're only saying that to be nice, but I'm leaving you here with an undead teenager and a dead senior citizen.
I'm stowing away in your car.
I slipped into the black pencil skirt and pewter-colored cardigan I picked for the funeral after-party. I was still strapping on my black heels when I came out onto the porch to find Jamie doing scissor kicks through a series of cabinet doors he'd set against the foundation of the house. I shook my head at him, feeling a rush of genuine maternal bewilderment. If I catch you buying ninja stars from Dick, we're going to have a problem. Jamie grinned up at me and, without looking, towed a door up from the ground and punched through it, midair. His enthusiasm for destruction was contagious. I barely contained a snicker as I accused him of being a show-off. Hearing a faint engine noise in the distance, Jamie and I turned to see a black pickup roll down the driveway, spitting dust and gravel in its wake. Instinctively, I moved closer to my child, positioning myself between him and the unknown driver. Jamie seemed mesmerized by the truck as it moved toward us. I cast out my senses, and I could feel the chaotic tumble of red, angry images. Whoever was in that car wanted to rip me to shreds.
"Do you know who that is?"
I asked quietly as I took off my heels.
I'd learned from experience that trying to fight in pumps got you nowhere. Jamie's mouth flapped open like a guppy's. The passenger door popped open, and I saw Jamie's mother jump out. I saw now why Jamie was so paralyzed by the approach of the truck. Hell, seeing the look on Rosie Lanier's face, I was a little afraid. Apparently, Ophelia had informed Jamie's parents, who had sired him. I remembered Rosie Lanier as one of those impeccably dressed moms who managed to traverse a muddy soccer field without dirtying her naturalizers. Her once carefully maintained mane of blonde was dull and stringy, sticking to her red, blotchy face. It looked as if she hadn't removed her mascara in days. And, as she stormed across my lawn and lunged at me, I could see that not only were her shoes muddy, but they didn't match.
"How could you?"
she demanded, slapping me across the face.
"How could you do that to him?"
My cheeks stung from the impact, but I accepted it. I was inclined to think that I deserved to be hit, whether I'd saved her son or not. I couldn't bring myself to lift my hand to stop her, even as she shook me so hard my earrings clattered to the gravel. This was just not my day. Night. Whatever.
"You killed my son!"
she screamed, rearing back for another blow. Mr. Lanier stepped out of the truck. He was staring at Jamie, watching his son with a mixture of horror and uncertainty. I was yanked inside his head before I could stop myself. His thoughts were a dizzying tidal wave of love, horror, relief, regret, and overwhelming fear. He'd never thought he would see his son alive again, and, well, he wasn't really, but he was moving and talking and staring right at them. And while he wanted to run to him and throw his arms around Jamie, he was struck still by fear. Would Jamie hurt them? Try to bite them? He knew that I was a vampire and that I'd never hurt anyone, but did that mean that his son was safe? Should he be moving closer to protect Rosie from us? At this point, I wanted someone to protect us from Rosie. Gabriel came rushing out of the house just as Rosie backhanded me.
"Mom, stop!"
Jamie cried, grabbing at Rosie's wrists.
"Rosie, please,"
Mr. Lanier said softly, stepping closer. Mrs. Lanier shook off Jamie's hold. He let her shove him away as she seethed.
"You killed my boy, you monster!"
"Mrs. Lanier, I'm so sorry. I didn't have a choice."
"Don't you talk to me about choice, you murdering bitch!"
As she stalked closer to me, Gabriel stepped between us and took hold of the arm that she was swinging at me.
"You need to calm down, ma'am."
"Hey,"
Jeff yelled.
"Get your hands off my wife."
"Gabriel, go inside," I said in a low, even tone. He hesitated, but I leveled a "don't argue" gaze at him. "I can handle this myself."
"I'll be right inside," he said.
He looked toward Mrs. Lanier and added,
"Watching."
"Mom! Mom! I'm standing right here,"
Jamie cried.
"Can you at least look at me?"
"Mrs. Lanier, you've known me since I was a little girl. Do you honestly think I would have hurt Jamie? Would I have bitten him if it wasn't absolutely necessary?"
"I don't know who you are since you became this thing,"
she shouted at me. "This thing is just like your son. Jamie's the same sweet kid he always was, just a little different now. You have an amazing opportunity here. You almost lost your son, but you can still talk to him. You can still hold him and tell him you love him. Can you honestly say that you don't want that?"
"I don't know,"
his mother shouted.
"You don't know?"
Jamie and I chorused.
"What do you mean, you don't know?"
Jamie demanded.
"I'm your son."
"You're a vampire," she shot back.
"You drink blood. You're dangerous. We weren't even allowed to know where you were until today, for your own protection. Did you think we were going to bring you home with us? Did you think we'd let you near your sister?"
And by the look on Jamie's face, I realized that yes, Jamie did expect to be taken home. Even though we'd explained that he was staying with us for the time being, he'd expected to go home with his parents. And he couldn't comprehend that it wasn't going to happen that night. It might never happen. Suddenly, I realized that my mother was not so bad.
"Mom,"
Jamie said, his voice dangerously close to a sob as he stepped forward and took her hand.
Please!
You stay away from us,
she yelled, stepping back toward the truck. You can't just cut him off like that, I exclaimed. She yanked the truck door open.
I can do anything I need to do to protect my family.
He's your son, I cried. Rosie slammed the truck door, but Jeff gave Jamie one last sad look. Quietly, he said,
Our son is dead.
The engine roared to life, and the truck thundered back out of the driveway. I watched the taillights dim in the distance, mesmerized by the fading color. Jamie sat down on the porch steps with a thud. Although he was naturally quite pale, his face seemed ashy gray.
Well, I don't have to worry about school anymore, he said. Or baseball, or college.
I'm so sorry. He sighed, running a hand through his hair. It was a manly, though weary gesture, and he might have pulled it off, if not for the faint, bloody smudges of vampire tears around his eyes. It's okay to be upset, Jamie. There's nothing wrong with being hurt when your family rejects you. And it could have been worse. Gabriel's family tied him to a tree and left him out for the sun.
Yeah, I guess.
My mom keeps trying to force feed me pot pie, I added.
What's wrong with that?
Have I not mentioned the solid foods make us vomit thing? I asked, cringing. There's a whole thing with our enzymes, well, lack of enzymes. The bottom line is that all human food will now taste like wet dirt and gym socks to you.
I've been too thirsty to think about it, he said, his brow furrowed. But now it makes a lot more sense that you don't have any food in the house. Well, this day just keeps getting better and better.
I smiled at him sympathetically. It's okay. You know, you've adjusted to this new life pretty well, considering. You haven't had a big freak-out moment. I had several when I was first turned. You haven't tried to run away. You haven't tried to attack a bus full of nuns. As your sire, I'm very proud of you. He groaned.
What is your deal with the busload of nuns?
It's an interesting visual, I said, shrugging and pulling him to his feet. Come on, we'll go inside and I'll warm you up a bottle of blood.
What about your mom? Weren't you supposed to go over there tonight?
I'll call her and tell her I can't make it. She'll be fine. Unfortunately, Rosie Lanier managed to call my mother before I did. Mama took time out of her busy grieving schedule to call me and yell like I haven't heard since that time she found the belly button ring I'd sported for a grand total of 3 weeks in college.
Oh, Jane, how could you?
Mama cried so loudly that I had to pull the phone away from my ear.
You were doing so well not eating people.
I didn't eat him, Mama. I was saving his life. It was either this or he was dead. It was the same sort of situation I was in, injured and not likely to get medical attention in time. Jamie asked me to turn him, just like I asked Gabriel to turn me. Would you have rather Gabriel just left me alone to die because he was afraid of upsetting you?
No, honey. You know that. It's just, oh, how am I going to face Rosie?
She fretted.
This is so much worse than that time Jamie threw that water pistol at your head and left you with that little divot in your eyebrow.
The aforementioned dented eyebrow winged up to my hairline. I'd completely forgotten about that. Jamie's mom made him pay for my emergency room deductible with his piggy bank savings and birthday money. But he never pitched another tantrum while I was babysitting him. I was so bringing that up later. Mama's insistent voice jerked me out of my thoughts.
Aren't you worried about what people will think?
When have I ever worried about what people will think? I asked.
That was before you owned a business that depended on the goodwill of your neighbors.
Dang it. She made a good point. My vampire and werewolf customers wouldn't care much about my emergency sire status, but a sudden exodus of walk-in human customers would hurt business. I would have to talk to Andrea about increasing our online sales presence just in case. I'll be fine. I promise.
Well, what does Gabriel think of all this?
She demanded.
He's fine with it,
I said, my voice rising to an octave only Fitz could hear. From across the kitchen, Gabriel gave me a sardonic little frown.
Honey, you have to be careful. You're in a very delicate stage in your relationship right now. You're living together. Gabriel's finding out about all of your annoying little habits.
A little huff of outrage escaped my mouth. What annoying little habits?
You're discovering things about each other every day. Not all of them good. Most of them not good,
Mama continued without pause.
And you're not married, so Gabriel practically has an escape hatch built into the back door. And then you add an attractive younger man to your household. He's practically an adorable baby bird with a broken wing. This is going to add stress to your already fragile relationship.
Fragile?
It's like you're trying to chase Gabriel away,
Mama sighed.
You're not getting any younger, you know, honey.
I'm not getting any older, either, I snorted.
You know what I mean, she exclaimed. It's like you're trying to sabotage your relationship. Don't you want to get married? Don't you want to make a commitment to Gabriel?
And suddenly, we were right back to the sort of conversation human Jane would have had with her mother. Obviously, Grandma Ruthie's death had sent Mama into a regressive tailspin.
Actually, I'm not worried about making a commitment to Gabriel because we're already engaged. Have been for a couple of weeks now. Okay, bye.
I hung up the phone, despite Mama's overjoyed shrieks, and banged my head against the countertop.
I'm going to kill Ophelia for this. I don't care how many intimidating quips she throws at me. Her adolescent ass is mine.
Chapter 6. A word about romantic relationships between sires and their children. That word is complicated. Siring for the Stupid, A Beginner's Guide to Raising Newborn Vampires. For the record, exorcisms are not as easy to perform as you would think. For one thing, when you cast a spirit out of the house, you have to be very careful to name a specific spirit, or you could bar other ghosts, namely Mr. Wainwright and Aunt Jetty, from ever coming near the property again. And second, if you do the rite with enough conviction, you can cast those spirits into the next plane, whether they're ready to move on or not. So, in other words, if I messed with forces I didn't understand, I could accidentally send my most cherished relative to that big University of Kentucky basketball game in the sky. Researching the various ways to evict my lifeless freeloader gave me something to think about, besides the gigantic pile of wedding planning books Mama had left on my front porch that afternoon. The Vegas route was looking better and better. I already knew a little bit about ghosts, thanks to my experiences with Mr. Wainwright and Aunt Jetty. For instance, spirits are not confined to specific places. They can wander as far as their energy can take them. Aunt Jetty had always had the energy of a hyperactive kindergartner at nap time, so it was no wonder that it took her 6 days after the passing of her sister to touch down, finally, at River Oaks. Since Grandma Ruthie's spectral presence had been popping up all over the house and generally making a nuisance of herself, I wasted no time in breaking the bad news to her. Aunt Jetty responded by cackling,
"Oh, sweetie, I know," she crowed. "That's where I've been the last few days. All of Ruthie's exes got together as soon as they heard, and they've been throwing a party like you wouldn't believe down at the cemetery."
"Nice," I muttered, as Mr. Wainwright shared a commiserating glance with me and shook his head at my dead aunts doing the cha-cha around the parlor. Gabriel and Jamie appeared in the doorway. Gabriel chuckled at Jetty's antics, but Jamie, who didn't quite understand why there were transparent people in the living room, rolled his eyes and went to the kitchen for a bottled blood. Aunt Jetty stopped two-stepping long enough to smirk at me.
"There are quite a few men around this town who have been waiting for this day for a while now, Jane."
"So, if you knew Grandma Ruthie was here, why did you stay away for so long?" I demanded. Aunt Jetty's misty form stopped in its tracks. I would say that her face went pale, but ghosts pretty much corner the market in pale. I guess spirits turn sort of bluish-gray when they're shocked to the point of vomiting ectoplasm.
That's not funny, Jane.
Oh, I'm not laughing. Grandma Ruthie has decided that she's going to haunt me out of the house.
Oh, hell no. Ruthie!
Jetty yelled.
You get your skinny ass down here!
I waited, but Ruthie didn't respond.
Ruth Ann Early! I'm calling you! Don't pretend you don't hear me.
Can't she just ignore her? I asked Mr. Wainwright, who nodded sagely.
Absolutely. We don't have to answer one another,
Mr. Wainwright said.
Though certain humans with necromantic or medium abilities can call upon the dead and compel them to answer, spirits do not have any authority over one another.
Though it's pretty damn rude for someone who claims to be such a paragon of good manners,
Jetty yelled, glaring at the ceiling. The windows and the china cabinet doors began swinging back and forth. A clay handprint I'd made Jetty in third grade tumbled from a shelf and shattered.
Gabriel crossed the room, prepared to protect me from flying objet d'art.
Jamie came rushing back into the living room.
The fridge door came open and smacked me in the face,
he said indignantly. The purpling bruise on his forehead was already receding, but I could tell that Jamie was more afraid than hurt.
Does it seem odd that she's advancing so quickly?
Gabriel asked.
At this point, most spirits haven't accepted their passing yet. Doesn't it take weeks to build up this kind of kinetic energy?
Well, she always did succeed by being a pain in the ass while she was alive. Why not now?
Jetty called out. There was an increased burst of activity. The curtains flapped like linen flames leaping from the windows. The cabinet door slammed against the wall so hard that the glass shattered. Figurines danced on the trembling shelves. And then, suddenly, nothing. Absolute quiet. Jamie seemed to relax instantly at my side, mirroring my movements like a nervous puppy.
That hit a nerve,
Jetty said nastily.
What happened? I asked. Why did it die out so suddenly?
I would say that her tank ran out of gas, so to speak,
Mr. Wainwright said.
You said she appeared to you before, Jane, that she was able to speak to you for several minutes. She managed to seal a door shut. She made you uncomfortable by changing the atmosphere of the room.
When I nodded, he said,
For a new spirit, that would take a lot of energy. I would imagine she will be quiet again for a few days after this display.
It explains why we hadn't heard from her again until now, I mused. So she's just lurking around in the ether, watching us and saving up her energy?
Essentially,
Mr. Wainwright responded, while Jamie declared that it was uber creepy.
I have a few books on the subject at the shop.
I had the urge to kiss Mr. Wainwright on top of his balding, insubstantial head. Of course you do. Any chance she could decapitate a deer and leave the head on my front porch? I asked. They gave me twin expressions of confusion and concern. Probably not. Hey, can't you just kick her out of the house? Jetty grinned at me.
You mean a ghost fight?
It's the opportunity you've been waiting for all of your life.
It doesn't work like that, honey bunch,
she said, her vaporous white hand caressing my cheek like a cool breeze. But you touch objects around the house all the time, I insisted, and you and Mr. Wainwright touch each other in ways I don't even want to think about. Beside me, Jamie shuddered.
Yes, but I choose to touch those objects. I choose to allow my energy to interact with Gilbert's.
Hold on a second, I said, holding up my hand. Deleting that mental image from my memory. And done. Please continue. Jetty sighed at my emotional immaturity and said,
If I took a swing at Ruthie, she'd just let that punch flow through her like water. And the same goes if she tried to hit me. We'd just be swinging back and forth until the end of time. And as much fun as that might be, I don't want to devote my afterlife to a catfight with your grandma.
Oh, fine, I grumbled half-heartedly. She crossed her scrawny arms over her chest and gave me her best impression of a stern look.
Now that the excitement is over, would you mind telling me who this handsome fellow is and what the hell you're doing wearing an engagement ring?
I ask myself that, too,
Jamie muttered. I smacked him on the back of the head while Gabriel glared. Aunt Jetty, you remember Jamie Lanier? Jamie had a little accident a while back, and I had to turn him. He's staying here with us until he learns the vampiric ropes, I said, condensing the tale considerably. Jamie shot me a grateful glance, as if he was glad not to have to live through the whole tragic mess again. He gave Aunt Jetty a winsome, though fanged, smile. She winked right back at him.
And the ring?
Mr. Wainwright demanded.
Oh, we're engaged,
Gabriel said, his tone playfully dismissive. Aunt Jetty squealed loudly enough to make those of us with super hearing clutch at our ears. She threw herself at me, attempting a hug without concentrating, and went through me. I shuddered against the clammy, got into the shower too soon sensation.
I'm so happy. Oh, Gabriel, honey, I told you she'd say yes eventually.
I just had to wear her down,
Gabriel conceded.
Well, I'm just as pleased as I can be,
Jetty crowed, sitting down on the couch as Mr. Wainwright's ghostly form hovered near and bust a frosty path across my cheek. Jetty demanded all of the details of how Gabriel wore me down. She cooed and awed appropriately over Gabriel's choice of proposal mediums, while Jamie rolled his eyes and made little cracking-the-whip noises under his breath.
You do realize that I'm sitting right here, yes? That I can, in fact, hear you?
Gabriel asked him. Jamie nodded.
Yeah, pretty much.
Gabriel growled.
Look, you—
Guys, not right now. All right? I sighed. I can only handle so much family dysfunction in one evening. Grandparent hauntings trump irritable male vampire posturing, hands down.
I think Jane could use some air. Dealing with Ruthie always did take the wind out of her sails. Why don't you two go for a nice little walk while we get to know Jamie? We'll pop over if there's any trouble.
Jamie seemed distinctly uncomfortable at being left alone with two dead strangers.
Sweetheart, I hate to break it to you, but you're the closest thing I'm going to get to a great-grandchild,
Aunt Jetty said as Jamie awkwardly settled next to her.
You better get used to me. Besides, I can give you all of the dirt on your dear sire. Humiliations galore.
Jamie rubbed his hands together in gleeful anticipation. Oh, yeah, well, when we get back, we can talk about my dented eyebrow, I retorted as Gabriel pulled me from the room. Jamie blanched. That's right. Mama reminded me of the water gun incident. Vengeance will be mine, Lanier. Gabriel dragged me out the front door, toward a path through the woods to the old cow pond. The words cow pond may not evoke images of the world's most romantic spot, but with the night birds chirping and the stars winking softly overhead, it was a pretty pleasant place. Gabriel demanded all of the details of the water gun incident. He was simultaneously entertained and indignant on my behalf.
Your child should have more respect for you, Jane. Even more so if he damaged your head in his human life, he chided.
I think we can agree that my head was bound for damage, with or without Jamie's help, I retorted.
You know what I mean. Your guilt has kept you from being strict with Jamie. You're trying too hard to be his friend, not his guide through his perilous first year as a vampire.
Have you been reading Jolene's parenting magazines again?
Yes, and that doesn't mean that what I'm saying is untrue. You need to keep a firmer hand with Jamie.
Oh, like you kept with me? I snorted.
That was different,
he insisted. How?
Well, my interest in you was romantic. I didn't want to push you away, though in the end I guess I did that anyway. If anything, you should learn from my mistakes as a sire, not repeat them.
Look, I know it's been different since Jamie moved in. I know it's an adjustment. We just have to make the best of it. Sure, Jamie can be an annoying, hormonal, self-centered, stubborn, lazy, sarcastic.
Where are you going with this?
I frowned. I'm not entirely sure. I know that deep down he's a nice person, but he does the most ridiculous, thoughtless, boneheaded crap. He pulls this whole, oh, you can't be mad at me because I'm winsome and adorable thing. Sometimes I honestly think I'm going to kill him. It's just so freaking dysfunctional. He wants me to take care of him, but he resents my treating him like a child. He's scared of growing up, but he clearly doesn't want me taking care of him. I'm having a really hard time finding the line to walk here. And the last thing I need is you chiming in, telling me that the little progress I've made isn't healthy. Can we just not talk about this right now? Can we enjoy the fact that we're together, out of the house? I miss being alone with you, having you all to myself. Gabriel looked the slightest bit ashamed and pressed a kiss at the corner of my mouth. You miss being able to have sex in the living room. During which I'm alone with you, I said. He chuckled. Think of this as a premarital cooling-off period. We've been living together for a while. Having Jamie around keeps us from taking each other for granted. I stopped in my tracks. Cooling-off period? What were we? That sounded like something you did for frenzied gun shop customers or couples mired in divorce mediation. It did not sound like the foundation for lifelong marital bliss. I tugged at the hem of my shirt and kicked off my shoes. Oh, screw this. Now we have to have sex. What? Here? He asked, motioning to the grassy, leaf-strewn ground, which I had to admit didn't look like the ideal spot for a tryst. I pushed his shirt over his head and yanked at his belt. Yes, I've had it with teenagers and unstable dead family members. We deserve a little time to ourselves. Naked. Gabriel cleared his throat as I started shimmying out of my jeans.
But isn't it a bit exposed?
Yes, which means that we probably have a maximum of 10 minutes before someone figures out that we're actually trying to enjoy ourselves, so they must put an immediate stop to it. So drop your pants, I commanded. His eyebrows bobbed. Sorry, I know this isn't very romantic. He bit his bottom lip, the upper quirking into a dirty little grin.
Actually, it's working for me.
I barely had time to get out a laugh before he had both tails of my shirt in his hands. There was pressure at my shoulders and the sound of fabric rending. I looked down to see him holding the scraps of my shirt in his hands. He smirked and shrugged.
If you get to be bossy and demanding, I get to be bossy and demanding too.
I hooked my foot around his ankle and shoved him back, straddling him as he landed. He threaded his hand up my side, plucking at the nipple before stroking my collarbone. He gasped as I ground down in little circles. He moaned and bucked up under me, sending me sprawling to the ground. He slid over my back, pressing kisses along my spine as he raised me to my knees. He knelt behind me, tugging my panties down. His hand skimmed around my hip, pulling me back against him. He ground into my ass, cupping his fingers around my pulsing warmth. He nipped and bit at my neck. I vaguely registered the sound of a zipper lowering. He guided his head between my folds and surged up as his fangs sank into my neck. I cried out at the sudden sensation of fullness, of being stretched and molded to him as he thrust inside me. I sat back, balancing against his thighs as his hands roamed my stomach, my breasts, settling over my throat as he pulled the blood there. I pulled his wrist across my mouth, caressing it against my cheek before sinking my fangs into his skin.
Love. Full. Love. 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 Mate. Happy.
This was pretty typical of Gabriel's thought stream during sex. The irony was that this was the only time I was privy to those thoughts, so my only window into my erudite mate's soul was when he was reduced to a horny, happy, monosyllabic mess. He pushed my shoulders forward until my palms rested on the dirt. He wound my hair around his fist, tilting his head to the side so he could continue to feed. The other hand snaked between my thighs to stroke and tease. My whole being seemed to tense up as he timed his hand, his fangs, and his thrusts in tandem. When one sensation struck, the next was on its heels. I was unbearably full, the coil of winding pleasure tensing inside me until I cried out. He withdrew his fangs, licking at the wounds gently, before sinking them in again. I arched up, screaming. He shuddered against me, his fingers threading through my hair to drag me closer as he released. I sank to the earth with a sigh, his weight settling pleasantly on top of me. Breathing deeply,
I pressed my cheek to the cool ground, enjoying the tickling sensation of the blades of grass against my skin. I closed my eyes, winding Gabriel's arm around me as I listened to the cicadas chirp and the mosquitoes drone. I could have very easily and happily fallen asleep right there. But there was an unaccompanied teenager in my house, and leaf bits sticking where leaf bits just didn't belong. I smiled, bust Gabriel on the cheek, and stretched my arms over my head in a languid, holding on to the last moments of peace we'll have in who knows how long gesture. You know, I have to say, for our first outdoor adventure, I think we performed admirably. I sighed. This isn't our first outdoor adventure, he said, trailing his fingertips across my collarbone. I think I'd remember the leaf bit issue if we'd done this before, I countered.
We've had sex outside before. Behind your shop, he reminded me. It was a semi-enclosed area, but I think it should still count.
That does count. You're right.
I usually am when it comes to reminiscing about sexual encounters with you, he said, smirking, because I remember every single one.
He punctuated each word with a biting kiss across my throat. Really? I drawled.
Vividly. It's hard to forget a woman who manages to seduce you while spouting odd literary trivia and anatomically specific threats.
Still think having Jamie around is going to force a cooling off period? I asked him smugly as I wrestled my way back into my bra. He helpfully adjusted the strap over my shoulder and snapped the clasp for me.
Yes. Or it could drive an insurmountable wedge between us so that we ended up heaving the bric-a-brac at each other. Ugh!
He chuckled as I elbowed him in the chest. That was one time. I laughed as he slid his arms around me and kissed my hair. I shrugged him off, grinning cheekily as I plucked grass and leaf bits from his hair. And it wasn't bric-a-brac. It was a book. Wait, are we referring to our first fight or our last fight?
It's sad that you have to ask,
he said, swiping at the mud on my cheek. You throw one little paperback at a guy and he gets all sensitive, he retorted.
It was the Lord of the Rings trilogy, in hardcover.
Somewhere in the distance, I heard a ping. What the? I turned toward the noise, only to have Gabriel wrap his arms around me and throw me to the ground. I heard his breath explode from his lungs as if he'd been punched in the back. I felt an odd, sharp object poking me in the chest. I looked down, unable to comprehend the red flower blossoming on Gabriel's chest. There was an arrowhead poking through Gabriel's shirt. Chapter 7. Do not allow your child to subsist on bottled blood alone. Newborn vampires need the nutritional support of live blood, or at least donor blood if the child has qualms about violence. A bottled-only diet would be like allowing a human kindergartner to live on jujubes and Mountain Dew. Siring for the Stupid, a beginner's guide to raising newborn vampires.
Ow,
Gabriel said dully, as if he'd just stubbed his toe. He slumped against me and passed out. Seeing the red-tinged grain of the wooden shaft sticking out of his skin, I felt a surge of panic. Did an arrow count as a stake? I realized that the arrow was lodged in the wrong side of his chest. He'd been shot about 4 inches too far to the right to do any permanent damage. But obviously, it still hurt like a bitch because Gabriel was completely unconscious, the skin around his lips white and tense. Fighting down my panic, I closed my eyes, focused my senses, and opened them to search for any signs of a human or vampire nearby. There was no scent, no movement in the distance. I could hear a skittering heartbeat moving away from me quickly. I could hear the faint crackle of tree limbs as the human archer ran from the havoc he'd caused. His mind was racing, so scattered and hyped up that I couldn't grasp at a single thought stream. Should I chase him or help Gabriel? Considering how much Gabriel was bleeding and the likelihood of being skewered myself if I caught the human, I decided to stay. I cupped my hand over the wound, thick red blood welling around my fingers and the arrow as I applied pressure. I thought back to all the bad Kevin Costner movies I'd seen involving dancing with wolves and Robin Hoods without the proper accent. When the hapless sidekick was skewered, Kevin would snap off the feathered end of the arrow and pull it out. I gently pulled Gabriel toward me and saw that there was no traditional feathered end to the arrow. It was a plain old sportsman's arrow, like most of the deer hunters in the area would use. I opened Gabriel's shirt and saw that the flesh around the protruding arrowhead was withered and crackling. A reaction to the wood? I reached over his shoulder and snapped off the notched end as close to his back as possible. Waking, Gabriel winced, leaning heavily against me.
"Ow!"
he said again, sounding more annoyed. I took this as a good sign. I wrapped my fingers around the arrowhead. "I'm not going to lie. This is going to hurt."
"What?"
Without further preamble, I yanked, hard. Gabriel yelped as the arrow slid free and clattered to the ground. The jolt of pain seemed to help him focus. His eyes narrowed, snapping to my face.
"Someone shot me with an arrow,"
he exclaimed. A nervous laugh bubbled up through my chest. "Yeah, sweetie. That's why there was a narrow wooden cylinder sticking out your back."
"Well, now that the initial panic is over, I find I'm really pissed about it," he grumbled.
I laughed, running my hand over his face. "Let's get you into the house before he tries it again, okay?"
"You know, this is your fault, Ms. Spontaneous Outdoor Sex,"
he grumped as I hauled him to his feet. "Actually, you're right. I should have known better," I admitted, tucking his arm around my shoulders and supporting his weight as we walked. "Nothing good comes from us having sex outside. I just now recall tasing you after the shop incident, and then creepy Janine sending me pictures of our activities afterward."
"We just need to do more thorough perimeter checks from now on," he muttered.
"Why are you limping?" I demanded. "The arrow didn't hit you in the leg." He stopped, his shift in weight pulling me to a halt, too.
"I don't know. It just seems like the thing to do after you've received an arrow wound."
I sighed as he straightened his gait and walked normally. "You are so the guy for me." The wound had closed by the time we reached the front door. Gabriel kept repeating,
"Who the hell shoots an arrow at someone? Doesn't anyone have any respect for the recent advancements in firearms?"
"What happened?"
Jamie called as we passed the parlor door. Jetty had him ensconced on the couch with a bottle of Faux Type O, playing a video game while she showed him my high school yearbooks. Where was the loyalty? Honestly.
"Just a little mishap with a stray arrow," I said through gritted teeth as I steered Gabriel down the hall to the guest bath where we kept the medical supplies.
Jamie dropped his controller and followed us. The potential to see real carnage was more appealing than killing digital zombies or whatever he was doing.
"Do you think it could have been a hunter?"
I asked Gabriel. "They've strayed onto my land before. I try not to get too grumpy with them because, well, they're armed."
"We could go look in the woods," Jetty offered, appearing at my elbow. "See if there's a suspicious character hanging around."
I nodded, and my ghostly friends disappeared through the front wall of the house.
"It's nowhere near bow season," Jamie said.
"So, you're familiar with bow hunting, are you?"
Gabriel asked, his tone suspicious. I smacked his good arm. "If you're going to be accusatory, at least man up about it. Jamie, did you shoot Gabriel in the back with a bow and arrow?"
"What? Am I going to get sent to time out if I did?"
"That's not really an answer,"
Gabriel noted.
"No, okay? I didn't shoot you. I was showing Jetty how to play Madden NFL 11 on Wii."
"When did we get a Wii?" I asked.
"This is what's disturbing to you in this situation? Heretofore unaccounted for gaming equipment?"
Gabriel demanded. I shrugged. "How am I supposed to take away privileges if I don't even know what privileges he has?"
"Damn it. I knew I shouldn't have told you," Jamie exclaimed. "Can we focus the conversation on my nearly being killed by a flying steak?"
Gabriel asked, his pallor getting more ashen by the second. "Jamie, could you grab Gabriel a couple of packets of donor blood from the fridge? Dick brought some by a while ago," I asked, pulling out my cell phone. "I'm calling Dick."
"Jane, wait. Gabriel?
I know you're probably kind of embarrassed. I'm not sure what to do here. Of everyone we know, I'd say it's most likely that Dick has survived something like this."
"I don't feel very well,"
Gabriel said, his voice strained as moisture pooled at the corners of his eyes. Jamie scoffed.
"I thought we don't get sick. Aw, come on, Gabe. Tears. I'm gonna find your man card and rip it."
Suddenly, Blood was streaming down Gabriel's cheeks. Our tears had traces of blood in them, leaving rusty pink streaks on our faces if we cried. Gabriel looked as if he was starring in a PSA about the Ebola virus. "Jamie, shut up," I commanded in a tone even Jamie couldn't argue with. "Gabriel, what's wrong? What hurts?" Gabriel opened his mouth to answer, and a tidal wave of dark crimson poured out of his mouth and onto my hands. Jamie shrieked and scrambled back. I let Gabriel sink to the hallway floor and cradled his head in my lap. He coughed, spraying red streaks across an ancient family carpet. Grandma Ruthie's tinny, disembodied voice fluttered at my left ear, screeching, "Don't let him bleed on the rug!" I ignored her, concentrating on the blood that seemed to be seeping from Gabriel's very pores. I sniffed at the arrow wound. The skin was starting to reform around it, although blood had started to gush in waves from the puncture, soaking through his shirt and seeping onto my legs. I'd almost forgotten that Gabriel was still holding on to the arrow. I took it from his hand carefully. It smelled funny, bitter and metallic, with an undertone of sickly sweetness. The wood seemed spongy and weak, as if it had been submerged in water for a while.
"This is what you get when you lie down with a monster,"
Grandma Ruthie sighed at my ear, clucking her tongue.
"Nothing but blood and death and ruined carpet."
"Shut the hell up, old woman! You laid down with more men than I ever could!" I screamed as Gabriel retched against me, spilling blood over my jeans. "Gabriel, please, tell me what you need me to do." Jamie was kneeling beside me now, holding Gabriel's legs as he thrashed and twitched.
"Do we call an ambulance?"
I shook my head, bit my wrist, and pressed it to Gabriel's mouth. "We have to flush out his system with new blood. It will help him heal. Same thing happened when I got silver maced last year. Get my cell from my purse. Call Dick. Tell him we need blood, any kind he has. Now!" When Gabriel didn't draw from the wound, I opened his mouth and dripped the blood past his lips. I could hear Jamie on the phone with Dick, his young voice pitched by panic. Gabriel's eyes dropped closed, but I saw his throat working to swallow. This was a hideous feeling, the helplessness, watching as he suffered. This was what Dick had felt when I'd been sprayed last year. This was what Gabriel had felt on the side of the road when I was shot in the back and he came to my house to find me bleeding. My blood seemed to help. Gabriel's legs stopped twitching. His fingers wrapped around my arm, holding it to his mouth. I stroked his forehead and asked Jamie for a wet cloth to clean the rust-colored tears from his cheeks. Minutes passed silently, without comments from Jamie or Grandma Ruthie. My limbs were starting to feel heavy, cold. I could feel my body function slowing down as the blood left my veins. I tried to remember the last time I'd fed, and couldn't. Clearly, my siring schedule was a little more hectic than I'd thought. "He's going to need more blood than what I can give him." Jamie shrugged as if he couldn't figure out why I was telling him this.
"Okay."
I smacked his arm and glanced pointedly at his wrist.
"Fine. I can't believe this,"
he grumbled, biting into his arm.
"Ow, that hurts."
"Be nice. I gave you my blood when you needed it." I helped him bring Gabriel's mouth to the freely seeping wound. This feeding was more detached, clinical. Jamie was leaning away from Gabriel as if he was afraid that someone would burst into the room and accuse him of being bromantic with his grandsire. I was momentarily sidelined, with less blood circulating around my brain and the panic seeping in at the edges of my consciousness. What more could I do? Should I call the council? What could they do for him? Vampires healed on their own. There were few medical treatments for us other than blood. Suddenly, Gabriel broke away from Jamie's arm, spewing all of the blood he just ingested over Jamie's shoulder and onto the floor. Jamie cursed and wiped frantically at his clothes. Gabriel's skin was cold and gray as I pulled him across my legs. I slid my hands down his cheeks, trying to wipe away some of the sticky crimson from his skin. His eyes wheeled frantically, searching the ceiling behind me. He couldn't seem to focus on my face. I leaned close to touch my forehead to his. His chest gurgled as he panted against my cheek. His fingers plucked frantically at my sleeve, pulling me closer. My eyes burned with unshed tears.
"Just hold on, please," I begged him. "We're going to get married. I want to spend the rest of my undead life annoying the living hell out of you. I can't do that without you."
Dick and Andrea burst through the front door,
blanching at the sight of Gabriel curled in my lap. Dick murmured,
"It looks like a Tarantino movie in here."
Recognizing a starving vampire when she saw one, Andrea rolled up her sleeve and took my place by Gabriel. She cradled his head with a practiced air and had him latched onto her wrist before I could blink. Reluctantly moving away from him, I felt the hysteria I'd been tamping down clawing its way up my chest to my throat. My knees gave out, and Dick caught my elbows to keep me from collapsing bonelessly onto the floor like a rag doll.
"Easy there, Stretch."
"I don't know what happened," I said, wiping at my wet cheeks with shaking hands as Dick led me to the couch. "We were just walking outside. We were talking, laughing, and then there was this noise, a ping, and Gabriel had an arrow poking out of his chest." I sprang off the couch and grabbed the arrow from the floor. "Dick, who do you know who might work in a lab? A hospital, blood bank. Hell, I'll take a high school chemistry teacher if they know what they're doing."
"Why? Don't you think we should focus on Gabriel right now?"
I gingerly held up the arrow fragments. He leaned over to sniff the wood and made a sour face. "I want this, tested for poisons, contaminants, drugs. I want to know why Gabriel reacted this way to this arrow."
"We can be poisoned?" Andrea exclaimed. "Why didn't I know this? I think that should be in the guidebook somewhere."
"I'm serious, Dick. I want to know what's wrong with that arrow," I told him. Dick snickered.
"Well, sure. I'll just scoot on down to my crime lab and fire up the gas chromatograph."
I glared at him. He grimaced.
"Inappropriate humor is how I cope, Jane."
"Don't tell me you don't know a guy." He shrugged.
"I know a guy."
"Of course you do. You think you can get me results quick?"
"For a price."
"There's emergency cash in the library, stuffed inside a copy of The Great Gatsby. Take as much as you'll need." Dick lifted a brow. I squeezed his arm.
"I trust you, Dick."
"Shouldn't I take my turn feeding him?"
Dick asked, his forehead creased with concern for his old friend.
"I'll take another turn before we take him upstairs," I said, shaking my head. "It would be better to know what we're dealing with now. Just go."
Dick gingerly wrapped the arrow bits in a plastic kitchen baggie and told me to wash my hands just in case whatever poison the arrow contained could be absorbed through the skin. He kissed Andrea on the top of her head as she continued to feed Gabriel and slipped out the front door.
"You know, it's at times like this that I'm really glad I'm friends with Dick Cheney," I said as Andrea squeezed my fingers with her free hand. "He is handy to have around when you need favors of a secretive and dubious nature," she acknowledged.
"Honey, I don't want to know what kind of favors he does for you."
"See? You made a lame little joke," she said, nudging me. "Everything will be just fine now."
When Andrea was starting to feel woozy, we poured the donor blood Dick had brought over down Gabriel's throat. I took another turn feeding him, hoping that somehow there was enough of his own blood left in my veins that it would be like getting an infusion from a compatible donor.